The West Photo Podcast.
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 Hello and welcome to the West Photo Podcast, hosted by the West Photo team. Me, Anna Sophia John, and the talented Livia Smith. West Photo is a photographic agency and picture library. We provide bespoke photographic printing, set up collaborative art projects, and offer editorial and design services. Throughout this series, we will be interviewing individuals from the visual arts, discussing their career and relationship with photography. This week, we had the opportunity to speak to Max Barnett, who is an alumni from the University of Westminster and graduated from the photographic arts course in 2013. Max is a photographer and the founder of Pilot Magazine. Max has worked with clients such as ASOS, Bobby Brown, Nike, River Island, and Roxander, to name a few. To give you a little context, at some point we start referencing a module from the photography course at Westminster called Page, Wall, and Screen, where you can choose to produce a publication, an exhibition piece, or a moving image piece. Thanks for listening and enjoy the episode.
We've made like a jingle, which you'll hear when you listen to it. It's hilarious.
You might find some new material.
It's pretty abstract. Just to warn you.
So, can you tell us a little bit about your practice, what you do at the moment, and how do you get involved with the photography industry?
So I'm a freelance photographer, and that's kind of how I make my income. And then I have a magazine called Pilot that I started whilst I was studying here, for my final project. And they're kind of my main two avenues for where I spend my time as well. Pilot kind of takes up all my time, and then making money is kind of like the side project, which is challenging but a lot of fun. So that's kind of the basis of what I do. I mean, generally, in terms of the kind of photography, things I get paid for would be like commercial work for kind of fashion brands, or this kind of work is the majority of things. Or there's like a school that I work with who work with makeup. It's like a makeup school, and like, yeah, I will work with the students on that and do their, you know, their photo shoots and things like this. I did a little bit of assisting at the beginning, but I never really, I did like a, it was like kind of just out of uni, I did a bit for like an on off for like 6 to 8 months, but that was kind of my only experience. So if you have any assisting questions, I don't really have any.
We've got loads.
Yeah, I don't really have any answers for that. Well, I have, you know, average kind of answers. I've experienced it, but not at length. So yeah, I would say that what forms my practice is essentially the magazine, to be honest, in terms of the actual work that I love making and the work I want to make. The magazine really has driven that side of my work. So I do a lot more kind of personal projects now, and every time I actually go away, I take my camera with me, whereas I never used to do that. And that's kind of a new development from working on the magazine. I'm actually enjoying photography again. I think when you study it as well, I'm sure you know that, like, you go through the ups and downs of like, it drives you mad. It can be as infuriating as it can be elating, the process. It's fun to re-engage with that side of photography, and that's kind of how I do, that's kind of what the magazine does for me personally, I think, as well. But that would probably encapsulate my practice, I guess. Photography, and I do more writing now, which is weird because coming from this course, I hated writing. And I was really bad at writing. Yeah. I forgot to attach my bibliography to my dissertation.
No.
I actually attached two bibliographies to the one that Eugenie didn't read. So, but I mean, that's kind of, you know, that was my writing experience. So I wasn't so good, I wasn't so savvy with writing. Whereas actually, with each issue I have to write an editor's letter, I'm doing a lot more editing on the written features now, and I'm writing more pieces myself. So all of a sudden, I've kind of gone from not being very confident with writing to actually kind of forming a part of my practice as well now. And the research is also a very integral part of the work that I'm making as well, because I like to understand the context of the work that I'm making, as opposed to just, I'm not really a photographer that just goes out and shoots. I do for fun if I'm on holiday, but if I'm doing a project, I want to have a reason why I'm doing it, and everything needs to be kind of laid out.
Yeah, it's probably a hangover from this course. Because a lot of people I speak to, when they leave, they kind of stop shooting because they have the feeling that they always have to know why they're shooting. And I think you have to get back into it with time.
Yeah.
Just find your own flow. And
yeah, I agree. And I think that was kind of one of the, I think, one of the undervalued aspects of the course here was that the lecturers really did push us to kind of think about context and do correct research as well. And I think that was something I didn't really fully appreciate until I started the magazine properly. Mm-hmm. And then I realised, like, if no one's going to do this research for me, and I need to do it if the magazine needs to progress. So the research was very important as well, actually.
Why did you initially want to start the magazine, coming away from the course and graduating?
There's a few reasons. I think the main reason was because I wanted to make work that I didn't feel was being made in the fashion, especially the fashion industry at that time. I mean, when I graduated, it was kind of really the peak of everything looking super digital, super retouched, and nobody looking like themselves anymore. And so for me, there was kind of, I kind of had this thirst to see reality and real images, which is kind of where the kind of the idea from Pilot came from. And that was one of the main reasons why I kind of pursued it, because I felt that other magazines weren't doing this style. I mean, actually, I think that maybe we were just doing something that was coming into fashion, and then it kind of came into fashion as the magazine was kind of growing, and then loads, all the other magazines now are very into this kind of more realistic approach. Like, ID is so much more stripped back now in comparison
to what
it was.
Yeah.
It was super, you know, same with Days, like the magazines that everybody kind of, the cult magazines that everybody fell in love with, and that kind of got a lot of young fashion photographers into fashion photography, have kind of returned a little bit back towards what they were doing before everyone kind of, before the digital retouching and super digi work exploded. And I think that in 2012, when the kind of concept of the magazine started in my second year, there really wasn't anything like that kind of stuff. There weren't any exclusively analog magazines, and I still don't think there are now. I think it's just because it's really expensive, and it's like only crazy people would want to subject themselves to this level of stress when making a magazine. Because it's one thing to make a magazine, but to make one when you are adding limitations to the process, it kind of makes everything more intense. But I think that's also been the thing that's driven the magazine forward too. So yeah, it was kind of this dissatisfaction with what I was seeing, coupled with, you know, an ambition. I really wanted to make something. I wanted to make something that I felt reflected what I loved, what I wanted to see. And I also felt that the idea was good because it was niche, and I knew that I could see that the other magazines were growing with niche kind of popularity. And I thought, well, you know, this magazine is here, it could exist, it's a good concept, so now it's up to me to push it forward. Otherwise, somebody who can take this idea and can afford to do it and can, or is maybe in a better position to create this magazine or use the idea for a magazine, will do it, and I will miss out on a chance to make something first and to kind of do something, kind of be ahead of the curve, I guess. I think if I'd stopped after uni, then the idea was kind of, I think it's just because you're very insular, aren't you, in uni, and you're very in your head. And I was thinking, like, if I leave this idea, somebody else who's maybe seen the idea will take it and could use it, and then I will feel like I had this great idea and now somebody's doing a great job with it and it's not me. So I think I would have been really annoyed at myself for letting it go. So that's kind of why I did follow it through. And I think that actually, I have seen that, like I said before, there's been a big change in fashion kind of photography and what's popular. And the stuff that we were really pushing for wasn't so popular, now is very popular. So I felt a little bit kind of justified in that decision, I guess. Otherwise, I would have, you know, probably done the assisting route and worked as a photographer instead. But
realizing you're on a cusp of a moment that's,
yeah, I felt like it really
sound
was
too hippie-ish, but about to happen, and actually taking action upon it.
And it felt like, and there's, and I think that's kind of become the core of how we look at photography and how we look at fashion as a magazine. We're always trying to figure out where the curve is going, like what's happening next, so that we can start to prepare ourselves for how we want to look at the world and at photography and at fashion and at current affairs. Through our own kind of perspective, in a sense that we feel like these things could be things that other people start to adopt further down the line, like they did with the kind of analog and the strip back of the beauty retouching and this kind of stuff. So Yeah, sorry. I mean, you probably answered that question.
That's great.
I'm curious, so you said you started it in second year, so did you start it as part of the page module?
No, I actually did screen. I didn't know, video? Was there no?
It is screen, so it's wall and screen.
Page wall and screen, yeah. So I did screen with Shirley. So I actually wasn't really that interested in doing a magazine at that point. I was really interested in making fashion film, which didn't continue. It was something I really enjoyed in that moment.
It's a safe environment.
Yeah, it wasn't for me. I mean, maybe like 10 years' time or something, but no, it was the... I don't know what the name of the module was. It was the one where you could work with anybody in the class, the January and second year, basically. Yeah. It was the module where you could just do whatever you wanted, and there was no kind of real guidelines. And myself and Bridie, we worked together on the course, and we said, let's make something together. So we started the kind of the concept for the magazine.
It was born
during one of the lectures. And then we went away and researched, and kind of came together with some ideas, like, if we were going to make a magazine, what would we make? And so we did spend a long time kind of, like, I mean, the first issue wasn't until 2014, so those 2 years were just purely, like, research, development, thinking a lot of the time, really, and practicing.
That's awesome as well, because I guess during that time, you could afford to do it within that space, and it wasn't... I mean, I'm sure, like, everyone has their, you know, financial difficulties at uni, but it's a good space to kind of try out ideas and,
develop
things.
Because you kind of have, like, you know you're at university, and whether you've got enough money or not, you know you have to spend a certain amount of money on your course. Like, you can't... When you're doing a creative course, there is an expectation that you have to put your own money into. You can't just show up and expect, you know, because you're paying a certain amount of money a year to get everything back. And I think that was kind of clear from the start. So, you know, for me, I think it felt less like I was spending money at uni. It was only really after leaving uni you start to realise the balance of everything, you know, not having a loan. I mean, I had a job at uni anyway, so I had the job and the loan, so it kind of helped. So it kind of helped me afford what I was doing. Mm. Obviously, after uni, it was job, no loan. So balancing that with trying to start a magazine financially was the real test. But at uni you kind of have to, really. You have to put the money in, you have to try, and this is the chance to do it. So that's why I really took hold of the chance, I think, and made as much as I could in that kind of short space of time.
And I'm curious, so how do you guys fund the publication? How did it start in the beginning? And also, how do you source the content?
So the funding, the first issue was actually a Kickstarter issue. Kickstarter had just, like, exploded that year. Everyone was like, you should do Kickstarter. It was literally, like, the very same year that everybody was talking about Kickstarter. And so we thought, okay, let's give it a go. Let's try this Kickstarter. We raised the money for the first issue. Mm-hmm. And then it took us a year to raise the money again for the second issue. And it wasn't until the second issue. After that, it was every 6 months. So to fund it, we would essentially make our own money. Like, there's a team of... I mean, there's maybe five of us that are the main kind of team. Three of us are the kind of core, and then a few extras. And we've kind of, in terms of kind of team members, we've gone from as little as, well, just me, to, like, 18 people, back down to, like, five. And now we kind of have, like, less people. But essentially, we were all putting our own money in to print it. Everybody was kind of at different stages of their careers, so some people had a bit more money than others. Sometimes I had a good job come through, so I had loads of money for me at the time, so I was like, right, I'm going to spend as much as I can on the print to get it through. So we were kind of just doing that for the first few issues, and then we started kind of doing advertising where we would... It was kind of advertising for a, you know, exchange of goods kind of advertising. So we would advertise a shop, and they would give us our launch party for free and buy some alcohol, and then we'd advertise for BrewDog, and then they gave us beer. Like, it was this kind of stuff. And now we're kind of delving into the kind of creative content. So we're making content for people who want it to look in the kind of style that we do. So we create content for people, and we have started doing kind of smaller adverts. And at the moment, kind of really mainly Kodak and Fujifilm are like our two advertisers. Okay. And then there's kind of a few others who we give, like, you know, young designer rates to, like, new, like, designers who are starting out, and try and drum up a little bit of, like, because every kind of extra bit of cash helps, really. So it means that, you know, if we made, like, you know, £1,000 on something, that's £1,000 less that I have to spend when the magazine goes to print, because ultimately that's what will have to happen if I don't find the money. So that's kind of now becoming a more serious part of the magazine, like how we're funding adverts, and we've actually started taking adverts for like banner adverts for the website and stuff. So that's a whole new area of advertising that we hadn't really considered at the beginning, but is, I could see potential for it to kind of take over, and maybe in you know, the years to come, the advertising coupled with subscriptions, which we don't do yet, would be kind of would be the main income for the magazine. Because at the moment we kind of make enough to print the magazine, and if we need to put any of our own money in to kind of top it up, then we do. But it would be nice, obviously, for the magazine to actually make an income, mm-hmm. and then to be able to pay ourselves and pay people who work with us. Yeah. Like, because at the moment we can only help with, we sponsor Kodak Film, and we can, if I've got enough money in my account and somebody needs money, we'll help them basically, mm-hmm. like for a shoot. I'll go, oh, okay, here's 100 quid to kind of like give you what you need. Like, but generally it is a bit like that, I think, and it will be for a little bit longer. Until we get to a more stable point. But we're already at a point of stability that we weren't at a year ago.
I'm curious to know, when you first started doing it, obviously it's a passion project, did you consider it as a financial income, like making any money off it at all? Was it...
No.
I know as an artist, you don't really want to...
I was kind of more just concerned at how we're going to find, you know, between 5 and 10 grand every 6 months, you know. It's kind of the main worry. That was the main thing. I was like, oh god, how are we going to find all this money every time? And then obviously, like, you know, now I've started to see the benefits of the magazine. Like, so it gets me jobs as a photographer separately from the magazine, so it's kind of like,
and you're helping other photographers as well.
Yeah, and like if we get opportunities, it also helps build a really good network of people that we love working with, and like there are photographers that we love working with, and we all kind of, you know, if there are jobs going that we know is good for somebody, we'll pass it on to either someone who's assisting in the magazine or helping us out, or photographers that we're working with. You know, if we know there's an opportunity for that would work well with somebody else, we will pass it on to them as they do with us. So it's kind of nurturing relationships that's kind of changed that aspect of things. But I think in terms of starting it, imagining to make money, definitely not, but just hoping that it would survive, like just keep going, find a way to keep it happening, and keep people talking about it and keep it relevant, I think was my main, instead is kind of my main concern. To make money, I will worry about more later. At the moment, it does good for me personally, so that's always a good thing. Like, it helps me get work, so... And sourcing people, you said. How do you source people?
Yeah, just content generally. How do you find photographers?
A lot of people come to us as well. So we have like a submission email, which is generally for the website. Like, people will send through submissions, and if we like them, then we will put them on the website, permitting that they haven't been published anywhere similar, like with a similar audience in the recent, you know, year to 2 years. If it's someone that had something published in The Guardian in 2009, we don't really care. If we like it enough, we'll publish it, kind of thing. But if they had it published last week on It's Nice That, then we're not going to publish it, you know, because it's too soon, unless we're doing some sort of collaboration with It's Nice That for a particular piece. But yeah, so we would do that, but also we find people online. We also go, we spend so much time going through photographers' websites, finding projects, Googling the hell out of the projects to see where they've been, if they've been anywhere else. And if they haven't, then we approach them and say, we love this project, can we republish it on our website? And it's just a good way to continue driving traffic. But then also, with a lot of kind of other photographers, we will get in touch. And if they haven't got anything new, but they're interested in shooting something, depending on what their work is right for, we will either commission them for the website or for the print. But the print is kind of a different level now. I think it's kind of, we are targeting specifically photographers at a certain level, in a certain kind of stage in their careers. And they've usually, now it's kind of, the route has changed. So we used to email photographers directly, and now we're emailing agents and dealing with the agents most of the time, and figuring out if somebody is available to do it and if their schedule is going to allow them to do it, because they only allocate a certain amount of editorial to each photographer on their books. So if the photographer's already shooting 3 editorials in the next 2 months, and they're all paying, and you know, generally the magazines, almost none of the magazines have budget or very minimal budget. So these are stories that the photographers have to invest sometimes thousands of pounds in themselves. So to convince the agent that they should be spending their money on shooting for free for you,
that's they have kind to want to do it.
Yeah, so that's kind of the next, that's kind of where our kind of sorting of talent is happening at the moment for the print is dealing mostly with meeting those agencies and trying to get them on side, basically, and to prove to them that we're a worthwhile place to put the work as well, because you kind of have to show the fact that you understand the value that you have, and you have to appreciate the value that you have, and they need to see that you're valuable as well, otherwise they won't give you any of the work of their artists, unless it's old work, like archive stuff that's already been published, and they're happy to give away that kind of stuff because all the effort's been made and the production's been done and the money's been spent, so any extra press is good press. So there have been instances when we've done stuff like this too, and we do book reviews on like art photo books that haven't come out yet, so then we get like a whole load of content. We've got like a review coming out for a book that's coming out in April, and the next issue's coming out in April, so we get to do a preview of this book that nobody would have seen yet, but we didn't have to do any production to get the shoot up to scratch, which we spend most of our time doing really is emailing photographers, trying to organise the photo shoots, trying to see what they need, if there's anything that we can do, like with production, with organising people, places, models, hair and makeup, styling, like everything. So that's kind of the sorting of the work is what takes most of the time, I think, as well. But it's varied how it comes to us and how we find it, I think, as well.
Okay, that's really interesting, because you can really witness the transformation of the magazine and how kind of the photographers grow alongside with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you definitely can. Like, some of the photographers that started with us, essentially, are, like, doing some really amazing things now, which is kind of crazy, because we were all just kind of, like, out of uni and making work together, you know, and one of the photographers, Tom, who's like one of our kind of closest friends.
Is it Tom Johnson?
Yeah. So he started kind of doing quite digital things, and he had been studying, but I don't think he liked university, so he left, and he was just working as a photographer for a while, and then we kind of got to know him. He shot a couple of pieces for us, and he really got into analog, and now everything he does is analog, and he's like obsessed. But to watch him kind of progress and kind of evolve as a photographer has been amazing, because he was kind of starting with us and we were like kids on the playground, and now he's signed with one of the coolest agencies, he's shooting Burberry campaigns, he's flying here, there and everywhere, and this is all in the space of like 3 years. So
he did also one of the covers, no?
Yeah, he did the second cover. Yeah, he's been shooting for us since that issue, basically, since the second issue. He shot the second cover, but he also shot on the third issue and the fifth issue as well. And now we have to have a meeting with his agent to try and get him to shoot for the magazine. So, you know, it's kind of...
That's really cool, though.
Yeah. It's funny. I mean, it's been amazing, like, to see that and to be a part of that as well as a photographer, but also as an editor and as a friend of his and some of the other photographers that we've worked with, to see them kind of progress and go to this kind of huge... And it's the same that we worked with Jack Davison at his kind of when he was a lot newer... And he was already signed, but he was kind of just coming up. And then after it was issue 3, and then within a space of 6 months to a year, he was like, you know, shooting the New York Times magazine cover, and he was, you know, shooting all this amazing, all these huge campaigns, and he kind of exploded. And he's just like a really nice guy, you know, like, and it's kind of weird and interesting to be a part of all of that as well.
Pilot spotting on the talent.
Well, that's kind of something we really want to try and do more of, actually. Like, we're always trying to keep an eye on the universities and kind of who's coming up through not even always university students either. Like, Jack didn't study photography. Yeah. Tom didn't finish his photography degree, so they didn't do photography in that sense. I think Jack did history at Warwick or something, or English.
Wow.
So, you know, it's completely... But he was into photography, so he was kind of doing it on the side. So I think that we're always trying to keep an eye out for new and exciting talents. Like, there's one called Ryan Skelton, and he's like a Central St. Martin student, and he studies on a course which is like creative direction or something. It's not photography, but he's essentially a self-portrait photographer, and he's been shooting some amazing stuff. And since we featured him on the website about a year and a half ago, and he's now shot for a print issue as well, but he's been shooting for days to print. He's been doing some really cool stuff. And he's another one of these kind of like younger talents that we've kind of been working with for a little while and seeing kind of how they develop and how we can kind of be a part of that as well.
That's really great.
Yeah, there's loads of photographers actually from that course as well. A lot of photographers have come from this course that he's doing. I don't know the name of the course, which is the problem, but it's not photography, because they don't do photography BA at CSM. They do this creative, they do an MA, but they don't do a BA. So there's this like creative direction course, which a lot of photographers have ended up on.
It's interesting.
And loads of really good photographers have come from that course. Like Hannah Moon was on that course as well, I think, and a few other kind of really interesting people. So, yeah, there's quite a lot we've been watching from there as well. And obviously each year we go to Free Range and try and find, like...
I spotted you at Free Range.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I know Tom a little bit, so...
Oh, really? Yeah. Was he... Oh, we were there, weren't we, together? Yeah.
Super creepy.
Tom is loud.
Black coat.
Just going back to... I don't want to rewind too much, but in terms of advertising... How did you initially take on that task of getting it out there and actually pushing it as
like
a
press
publication?
And stuff.
Yeah.
We just emailed everyone and said, please write an article on us, talk about us. We're doing something different. We're doing something exciting. You should be speaking about this. Like, this is press worthy. So we got a lot of press for the kind of like the first two issues, like on loads of different places, like Vice and Creative Review and Dazed and ID and everywhere basically was talking about it. But then the problem was, we then encountered we got to the third issue and less people wanted to talk about us. And they were like, and we were like, what's going on? And they were like, well, you haven't got a new angle for us to talk about. We can't just say all analog publication with no beauty retouching again and again and again. Mm-hmm. So it kind of helped us get a bit smarter actually and realize, okay, so if we want them to publish press on us, we need to give them specific stories from the issue, or we need to give them like a new angle, or we need to be talking about something relevant in, you know, within culture or politics or economics, or you need to be saying something that other people want to talk about because we've got a stance on it. Yeah. So then we kind of start to think, okay, so how can we make that the way we get press? So now it's kind of like an open book where each issue that comes out, if we can get someone to do a preview on us and somebody to talk about a particular article or a particular feature that we've done. We finally started thinking about, like, so who would we want on the cover? And we're actually emailing, like, you know, talent and different people and notable people so that we can start to line up covers in the future with people that would instantly get us press as well. So, and that was something that we weren't really doing before because one didn't have access to certain people, and two, it wasn't really kind of the angle that we were taking. But obviously as we're kind of developing, it's kind of an area that we're interested in, like working with, like, not celebrity people. Like, you wouldn't see like a Taylor Swift cover, for instance, but, you know, or like a Miley Cyrus.
I kind of want to see that.
I mean, it would be cool. But at the same time, it'd be more kind of like, I guess, kind of quirky, interesting actors and musicians and this kind of stuff. Yeah. So we kind of start going into this territory now. And I photographed a really well-known choreographer for the next issue, so that could be a way for me to get press for my photography, but also for the magazine for the next issue, because he's like one of Britain's biggest choreographers. So that's kind of a new element of press that we could find as well, because we've never been in like dance press or theatre press before. So that could be another audience that we haven't yet tapped into. So now I'm going to focus a lot of press on that feature. And we have like an actress that's going to be on the cover, so we're going to focus press on her and on the choreographer. So you can start to think. And then we also have a big fine art kind of documentary photographer cover, like an archive cover for the other one. So it's kind of starting to think. And also we don't really play on the no beauty retouching thing either anymore. It's kind of become a part of the foundation of the magazine, but it's not really what we get press on. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't be surprised if we had like a really famous actress, say, on the cover. We would probably get press all over just for the fact that she's on the cover without any retouching, even though for me that isn't really groundbreaking anymore, because a lot of other magazines have now done this. But I still think it would be something that a lot of people would probably want to do press on if we did have like a super famous person on the cover, basically.
Yeah. It's weird that people are so interested in seeing women without makeup and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like, is it that? You know,
no, it's not.
It's weird, isn't it?
It's not that kind of groundbreaking anymore, I don't think. But I don't know, because I think what's interesting is that even before Photoshop, people were painting negatives and altering negatives and dodging and burning. So there was kind of Photoshop going on before it existed anyway. So people were kind of changing and doctoring images to make themselves or others look better. So kind of interesting that we don't even really do that. So that's quite funny, actually, in the sense, I don't know, in terms of how people are being represented or shown. Because everybody kind of assumes digital happened and retouching happened. there's so much stuff happened before. Like Jean-Paul Gould, if you know Jean-Paul Gould, like all of the cutting of the negatives and stretching out the limbs, and you know, his was kind of more of a theatre performance, but it gave an insight into how much, you know, old photography and negs and could be changed and retouched as well. I know that might be a side topic.
It's really interesting.
No, it's
something that I thought about just now.
So, how come you named the magazine Pilot?
It was a pilot project. It was, quite simply, it was a pilot project. I mean, in a sense, like what I said before, it's kind of become the, is it a mantra? I don't know, of the magazine. Like, it's kind of become the basis of how we approach work. So pilot project, something new, trying something new. So each time we're making something, we're trying, and we're always going to keep our eyes open. So it's kind of, it did just begin as a pilot project, and I just changed the I to a Y, because the Y looked nicer than an I, because the I made it look lopsided, and a Y made it look equal. So that was the only reason why the Y was there. But, and also I didn't want people to think it was like a plain magazine, or like an empty magazine. So we kind of did that. But then, yeah, so it kind of represents really the fact that we're always kind of looking for what's next and keeping our eyes open and trying to keep that freshness, I think, is kind of what it's kind of come to represent as a name, but it didn't really mean that to begin with, for sure.
So we've seen online that you have a studio space. Mm. You have quite a big team. Do you all work within one office, or are you down in the studio? Like, how does that actually work logistically?
It's interesting you asked, actually, because a lot's changed over the last few months. So we had this amazing studio space, which was huge. It was seriously expensive, and it gave me nightmares to like try and finance the place. So luckily they knocked the building down, so we don't rent
it.
Yeah, thank God. It was a huge burden, but I loved it. It was an amazing space. We had half of it was a photo studio, and the other half was kind of our office space. And we actually subletted desks to other photographers and creative people, so we could kind of subsidise the cost of the rent. But essentially, yeah, like me and Patty, or Patricia, she's the fashion director, and we kind of do the creative direction for the magazine. We're kind of the only really full-time people. So it's us, and then whoever's assisting us or interning for the magazine would be in the office. And then other people would kind of come and go depending on their schedules. It was quite busy and fun, and everyone kind of coming and going was a lot of fun. Now we're kind of in a smaller office, and we sublet desk from somebody else. So that, as to kind of relieve a bit of the pressure of running a space. Because we were very naive. We just kind of started renting the space, didn't realise you had to pay VAT on top. So it was an extra £400 a month.
Good.
That just came out of nowhere. We were like, oh, we have to find £400 extra each month now. How's that going to happen? You know, you go in with friends. There was like five of us renting it, but everything was in my name. So after a while, people start dropping off, and then it's just you, so you have to, you know, get creative and figure out. So we were renting the studio out, and it was just far too much juggling on top of the magazine and my own work as well. So now we've realised that was a bit too ambitious to begin with. So we've come back, and now we're in a studio where somebody else is renting us the desks, and we just pay a monthly fee.
Nice.
And it's just so much more stress-free. We rent a desk each, and we have a third desk, which is kind of like our assistant/intern desk. So anyone who's with us on that, we'll have somebody each. Basically, I will have somebody one day, and Patty will have somebody another day. And that's kind of... So it's actually a lot more quiet now, because we share with other people, and the people that we're sharing with are very quiet, so we're quieter, and we're actually quite loud in general. We're really loud. So for us, we've had to kind of change our pace a lot, which I think has actually been better for us. So the kind of studio environment that we had before was hectic and wild, and we had people coming and going, and we could pretty much do what we wanted because it's a huge space. We were there. I was there until God knows what time every next morning so many times, just working on deadlines because I kind of could. The space we're in now is 24-hour, but it's not the same vibe, so I'm kind of enjoying going home at a more reasonable time, and we have less people coming and going.
So studio space then... When you do shoot, when it's not on location, do you have a particular studio that you always go back to?
No, it depends on if the photographer has enough money to rent their own studio or not. And if they don't, do we have enough money in our accounts to help them rent one? And if we do, then we help them rent one. And if we rent one, it's the cheapest one we can find, as long as within reason, as long as it's not like a horrendous studio. Generally, it's whatever we can find within reason that has the correct specifications for what the photographer needs, whether they want natural light or whether there's a particular flash or tungsten light that they work with. So it's kind of more about that. But I actually live in a huge car park, so we use that. We used to use that a lot for the photo shoots as well, because it's just a big empty multi-story car park. So we were using that for photo shoots for a while. And now that I'm kind of, now we're in, not in a studio anymore, I'm kind of doing all my personal work back at home, back in the car park again, because it has enough space for me to do portraits and things there. So I've done a lot more stuff there lately, actually, which has been quite fun to kind of do that again.
Do you ever feel that there's uncertainty as to why a client is approaching you, like what, as a photographer or as a kind of magazine editor? Is there ever, like, a weird tension?
Of what they want?
Yeah, what their kind of motives are.
I think for us, luckily with the magazine, we don't really work with anybody unless they really get what we're doing. Mm-hmm. Because, like, we put enough money, blood, sweat and tears into the magazine. We're not going to compromise it for a client who doesn't align themselves with what we do. So we would never work with anybody who won't allow us to leave the images unretouched, and this kind of thing just wouldn't happen. Whereas for me, like, personally, as a photographer, it's a lot more confusing, I think, because you kind of just do what you get paid for, if you know what I mean. So you're more available to different jobs and varied styles and varied things, as long as they're paying you enough. So that is when I've had more confusion in that kind of work, because clients not explaining properly what they need, but also you, when you're learning, not knowing necessarily what to ask either, or what to tell them that you require, especially if your name's going to be on the job. So I think that was something that I learned definitely in the last few years, and I'm still learning now, you know, because you work with friends sometimes, so your guard is down and things change, you know, so it's much more confusing. And it was like that a bit more at the beginning with the magazine, when I was a bit more shy, maybe, and more nervous about kind of like maybe upsetting a friend or this kind of stuff, you know, like if somebody wanted to shoot for us, that really wasn't right, but we've been friends for 5 years. Yeah. I'm like, how do I navigate this? And now it's quite simple, it's just, it doesn't work. We're not the same, we do different thing, and then it's fine. But then it was much more like, ooh, I have to write this really long, awkward email. It's going to take me 4 hours to write to apologise to my friend that their work isn't the work that I'm doing, basically. Yeah. It's, you know, this kind of, that was kind of more of in terms of the magazine. But with clients, we've always been much more firm, because we think if they're coming to us for something, then they want what we do, not something else.
Exactly,
if they want something else, then we're happy to say, you can just go to someone else then, you know.
Just set boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Whereas I'm a lot less confident to do that with my own stuff, because it's kind of weird when, like, a pilot's like my child, so, like, I'm much more protective over that. Whereas
you have a whole team that kind of stands with you.
So yeah, exactly. And it's not just, it doesn't just reflect on me, the magazine, anymore. It reflects on a handful of us. So I can't just make decisions for the magazine anymore, like, just arbitrarily just do what I want. I can't do that now, because there's other people who are putting their names to this, you know, this project of mine, and it reflects them now too. So yeah, we were a lot more firm with the magazine and how we would work with people. We did a really good job recently with this Swedish watch brand, and we worked with them for 12 months just curating different things each month, and it was so much fun, and they loved everything that we were doing, and they didn't ask us to change anything. They didn't ask us to do anything that wasn't us, basically. And that was a great example of how these kind of collaborations can work with a client. But that is also the only example of that I've got.
Trust is, yeah.
Yeah, it's
a very rare thing.
Yeah, it's true.
Just to finish off, could you give someone who wants to start out making a publication just one piece of advice?
Don't do the same thing everyone else is doing. Just, please, God, don't do it. Like, if you really want to make a magazine, think about it. Think about why you want to make a magazine. Like, I've seen so many magazines come and go since I started this one that have nothing, no substance to them. And I think that's because whoever was making the magazine just really wanted to make a magazine but didn't always know why. And I think knowing why you want to make the magazine is important. Like, obviously, there were so many things we didn't know about the magazine that we've learned along the way, but it did start with a strong foundation. I mean, it was 2 years of research. It wasn't, you know, a few coffees with some friends and let's just make a website. It was a long, drawn-out process, and I'm sure for a lot of other magazines it was even longer than how long I took to develop the idea, but I do think that that's the one thing that I think is most important. Like, if you really love magazines and making magazines, it doesn't mean you have to make one. You could go and work for somebody else who's making one. If you don't like have a concept, you just want to make a fashion magazine.
It's more about the object than...
Yeah, then you may as well put your efforts and your passions towards helping somebody who's got a magazine that you love. Because so many magazines are looking for help and for people who are into what they do. Like us included, but all of them, a lot of the bigger ones as well, you know, like you may as well try and get your foot in the door with them, and you know, and then never know what happens. Like some of the photographers who are doing really well now all started out like in Telling It Dazed, and you know, Leah Colombo, who's doing huge stuff now, she was the backstage photographer for Dazed for Fashion Week for like 4 years, and you know, she was doing it from when she was super young. But that was, you know, and maybe, I mean, I don't know her personally, so I don't know if she wanted to make a magazine, but she'd be a good example of a photographer who got in with a magazine and was like, okay, this is actually where I want to go, and I want to do it this way. And then some other photographers have done that, but then maybe stayed with the magazine and now are like photo editors or end up running the magazine, but it just didn't start out as theirs. I think if you're going to make one, just take time to think about it and think about why you want to make it. And I don't necessarily know if you have to have goals, because I don't think we had goals, per se. Like, we kind of just figured those out, and are still figuring them out now. But I think you just have to care enough about what the content that you want to make as well. And you have to really think that... Like, I was lucky that nobody else was doing what we were doing. It's kind of changed a bit now, and people are more interested in what we do, and there are more magazines doing this kind of style. But at the time, there wasn't really anything like it. So for me, I was like, this is crystal clear, this is what I'm going to do, because... It was obvious in that sense, but I think I was lucky to be thinking about it in that time. I think that for somebody to come from a course like this, I'm going to make an analog magazine isn't really groundbreaking, because it's a very analog course. You know, I'm actually quite surprised it hadn't happened, you know, before.
Yeah.
So like that's
sometimes the most obvious thing.
Well, yeah, exactly. So I think that. You know, and that I feel is kind of the base of my main piece of advice for anyone who wants to make one. Just spend time with it, spend time with the idea. Like the name, that Pilot didn't used to be called Pilot, it was called something else. All of this time, you don't want to be doing all this kind of changing and chopping and changing so publicly. You want to be doing it in the private, and then when something's ready, I mean, even in the four years that the magazine's been out for, the image has completely changed. But it started at a point of kind of honesty, I guess, and at a point of it was still a strength to the kind of style that I wanted then. It's just I didn't necessarily have access to it. But yeah, think about it, take time, don't rush, because you've got so much time. Like, we're all so young still.
That's great advice.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.